Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, remember how when we were in high school and we had shop class, we may have had some art classes, we may have even had some electronic classes. Some of that they don't have anymore, but they do have a replacement that maybe is better focused. It's STEM and STEAM programs. They're gathering kids together, students, and helping them get focused on science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. We're talking to Bill Bennett and Sean McMahon about that coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here with you. Where's here? Here is in the Telos Alliance Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. That's where I am. Glad to be here with you. And thanks to Telos Alliance for giving me a little bit of time off on Thursdays to bring you this program, This Week in Radio Tech. Of course, I can highly recommend Telos Alliance and, you know, all their stuff, Telos and Omnia, Axia, and Linear Acoustic, and 25/7, and just all that stuff. Boy, good. Anyway, good stuff. Minnetonka Audio. That's what I was trying to think of. So thanks a lot to Marty and Cam and everybody else, and Frank and everybody at the Telos Alliance. Okay. Hey, let's go ahead and bring our guests in. We got a couple of guests to talk about something that we've never talked about before on this show, not quite in this context. I guess we did interview years ago. I interviewed Jeff Littlejohn over at iHeart about where the next engineer is coming from. And it's a touchy and difficult subject, but we have some good news today to talk about. And let's go ahead and bring in both of my guests we have here. Let's click the button here. Sean McMahon is in the middle. Hello, Sean. Welcome in. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Sean is the robotics team head coach. Where's that at?
At Gateway High School in Monroeville, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Is that outside of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, just east of Pittsburgh.
Good deal. Sean, we're glad to have you. Thanks for joining us on the show. Also, Bill Bennett is here, and Bill's been a face on here before. Hello, Bill. Good to see you.
It's great to see you again, Kirk. Hello, Sean.
Bill, not only are you a recovering broadcast engineer, but you are the first robotics coach, mentor, and judge.
One of many, indeed.
Okay. We're going to hear about all that coming up. Now, let's have the elevator speech, what we're talking about. There are two words that start with S that we're talking about. Bill, give us one of them, whichever one you like.
Serendipity.
That's not the word I had in mind, but okay.
Oh.
Starts with S-T?
STEM.
STEM. STEM. I've heard about this STEM thing. And Sean, what's the other word?
STEAM.
STEAM. And apparently there's a difference. So, and you may think you know what the difference is. I have several correct answers for you coming up in the show as we move along. Hey, but right now I want to remind you real quick about one of our sponsors, and that's Radio Guide, Raytops Magazine Radio Guide. And you better believe there's some STEM and STEAM understanding right here. This is the July and August 2021 issue. If there's a next issue, I haven't gotten it yet. Seems like there will be real soon, or maybe I've just missed it. But anyway, this is the July and August 2021 issue, talking about Shively pattern work. And you know, radio, there's several industry magazines, but what I really like about Radio Guide, and you can go to radio-guide.com to see more, but Radio Guide is cool because Radio Guide gives more space. Let's see if we can, there's the three of us, and there's Radio Guide magazine. You can get the online version by going to radio-guide.com. That will forward you to mydigitalpublication.com. And we'll show you what's going on there. But you can see that they've got great articles in here. Shively Pattern Work is the cover story. Good Feedback is another story. Let's Keep It Clean, Chief Engineer Story from Scott Schmeling, FCC Focus. And these are all more lengthy articles than you'll find in other magazines. There's a great article about the back UPS. So lots of cool things going on there with Radio Guide Magazine. So go to radio-guide.com to see Radio Guide Magazine. And hey, you'll see an ad in here. I'm always a little bit proud. Well, if I can find it quickly. They always have a little blurb for This Week in Radio Tech. Tell you what, I'll make you find it. It's in there somewhere. It's a half page. Thanks a lot, Raytop and Radio Guide. Radio-guide.com. All right, let's bring our guests back in here. Sean McMahon and Bill Bennett. Glad to see you both. And Bill, you contacted me a few weeks ago saying, Kirk, you know, I got an idea for a tort topic. And what did you tell me? What was your idea about?
Well, I mean, so broadcast engineering, right? We've been in the industry for a long time, and we know that there's always a lack of engineering talent out there. And broadcast engineers are hard to find. They're a unique type with special interests and sometimes some really interesting fields. But there's just not enough of them. And so how do we recruit more? How do we get more people excited to consider broadcasting, some part of engineering or technology related to broadcasting? And it just seemed a great idea to talk to you about it because you talk to a lot of other broadcast engineers, especially in radio. And I think there's an awareness out there that we could raise to help other engineers see that there's something they can do to help raise awareness in their communities, to help kids really get an understanding of science, technology, engineering, or math, or STEAM, that's STEAM, and then STEM, science, technology, engineering, arts, or math. And there's a lot of different areas that those students could find interesting in the radio and television broadcast environments. And they have really good careers from that. So, you know, we just got to raise awareness.
And Sean McMahon, you are not a broadcaster yourself, right?
No, sir.
But as the robotics team head coach, we'll get into this later about, you know, how I came up into the area of engineering and how Bill came up into the area of engineering. So a lot of similarities there, but it seems like the way that we came up is a bit different than what students are finding these days. And Sean, tell me if you would a bit about your experience as a robotics team head coach and how you get, you know, what about getting students interested in that or something that seems cool and then seeing where they diversify out into in terms of career interest.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, you know, we'll see people at community demonstrations and they're like, oh, look, it's BattleBots.
BattleBots.
Right. Yeah. So we have to take the time to explain to people that like, no, we're not BattleBots, but we show the people out there what the kids, you know, what they're doing, where they're designing and building and wiring and programming these robots for competition. And, you know, at school, it's a little different. A lot of times the kids at school join just from word of mouth, like their friends have came and tried it. Despite being around for 15 seasons coming up in January here, we're still a relatively small club, usually 15, 20 kids. And so, but those people that do it and do it for, you know, the 3 or 4 years in high school, they'll tell you it's an experience unlike anything they've ever seen before.
What? Why do you suspect that? Yeah, I see a lot of these STEM and STEAM programs, again, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. There seems to be a couple of camps, those who are in favor of including arts, those who may think that it detracts or dilutes the others. You can stand where you will. I think there's value there. And there's other words, technologies, or areas that start with A that some other people stick in there. For example, some people say, well, STEAM, well, it doesn't have to be arts. It can be aeronautics. It can be aviation. It can be astronomy. It can be aerospace. You know, it can be anything you want, although I think arts is a perfectly valuable thing to focus on. But what I'm curious about is robotics seems very attractive. It seems like something that kids, students have interest in. Talk to me about the attractiveness of robotics to get people interested in this, Sean, and then how you help them maybe discern where they want to go from there. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, like we were saying, robots by nature are cool. Like, you know, as you're younger and you see them, they appear to be magic, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of our favorite things, you know, when we share with, especially with younger kids, like they really think that you know, the robots are alive and out there doing things. As the kids get a little older, they start to see the, you know, where you can apply some of the things they're doing in class between the mathematics and the physics. And that, you know, you talked about STEAM and the arts and stuff, and these robots are works of art in so many ways. And so the design is in there too, and not just making it mechanically functional, but also that it like looks nice. Right. So I think that when kids come along, a lot of times kids join the team because it sounds cool and they don't know exactly what they want to do. So we try to give them as much exposure as we can to let them mess around with how the robots are wired, or go see the software folks and, you know, try that and see if it's something that they would like to do. We try to get as many kids the opportunity to drive the robots as possible so they can see if maybe that's something that they like. So it's like exposure, basically, to let them have different opportunities at the meetings to try different things and try to find the area that fits them well. Some kids know exactly what they want to do. We've had kids join day one. They're like, I want to be a programmer. And that's all they do for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. And we've had kids, you know, directly related to this show. We've had kids that come in and they make videos, right? They like to shoot video in the workshop. They shoot highlight reels and cut them together so the families and everybody can see what they're doing. And then they also make videos for award submissions. So like, that's a super valuable skill on a robotics team like ours.
What did the question for either one of you or both of you, what did, I was not, when I was in school, yeah, that was a long time ago, I get it. But when I was in school, we didn't have these acronyms STEM or STEAM. We did have shop class. We did have woodworking class. Other than that, and I went to a semi-private high school where it was actually run by a university. And I had an interest in electronics on my own. And so my dad or me purchased Heathkit kits, Radio Shack kits. I just knew that I had some kind of interest in electronics. How did Bill, how did you come up in the world to become interested in broadcast engineering? How did you get led there without a specific STEM or STEAM program and when you were a youngster?
You know, it's funny. I was nervous that you, an hour ago, I was nervous that you would ask me this question. And then you, I've been thinking more about it. And Sean, you said it, the art is what got me into it. In high school, in technical theater, I wanted to be involved in lighting and sound for live performance. And now, granted, that's not really board level electronics at that point. But then after that, I got the bug for lasers. And when I was 20, I incorporated a laser display production company. And that was, I had to design and build with a lot of help from a lot of generous people who had time to give me advice. So I kind of, I guess, was lucky to build my own virtual robotics team that, you know, and then I had to design and build these electronic things to do creative things with them. Hmm. So the A was always the focus, but to do that, the technical was needed to get to the, you know, the art. But, you know, in radio and broadcasting in general, there's still now, decades later, the magic of being in front of a microphone or camera, but even something special with that microphone where hundreds of thousands or millions of people can hear your voice. And I think there's a lot of power in art there as well. And so, but you have to have the technology to make that art work. So,
yeah, that's a good point. In fact, you know, I know, look, I was talking about our sponsor Radio Guide, but in this issue, there is, and it's weird. One of the first articles I ever wrote as a self-taught broadcast engineer was about airflow. I've always thought airflow was really interesting in cooling things off. And I saw ways that airflow systems were set up that I knew weren't right. That I just had this gut feeling that that's not very efficient. Look how hot it is over here. And why can't we run some air over there? And there's an article here by John Marcon called The Air Cooling Blues Part 2. And it talks about, you know, identifying on a circuit board. And this could be a robot, right? It could be a robot with air cooling problems on its heavier duty transistors and circuits, the MOSFETs that are moving heavy servos and providing power to actually do heavy duty work. But he talks about here how to identify parts that have been heat damaged. And then later in the article, he's talking about airflow systems and designing airflow systems for broadcast transmitters. Okay. Wow. Now, I don't know. I was lucky. I just had enough kind of gut instinct about this to at least not be wrong too many times. Right. I had enough sense to figure out, okay, I never put my my clients' money at great risk, because I kind of had a feeling, and I would read too. I would go, oh, let's see, for cooling things off in a studio, we wanted quiet air conditioning. So that's going to mean, let's see, if you got a vent here, a small vent pushing a lot of air through it, that's going to make noise. It's going to make air noise. And so maybe cooling a studio would be better with a large air vent. And maybe I learned the word a low velocity, a high volume, but a low velocity. And then I learned that, hey, air filters for such systems could be effective if they have a large, you know, square footage area, right? A large air filter with low velocity will clean the air and not make noise. I don't know how I figured that out, but you know, if I could have been involved in, I guess what I'm saying is, imagine where I'd be if I had a STEM or a STEAM program at my high school. Sean,
you had,
I wonder,
a natural instinct. Yeah, that's what it is. You followed your natural instinct, though, and saw where it went. Sean sees that every day.
Sean, I'm really curious about this process. I understand the attractiveness of robotics. I mean, that's just cool for lots of people, boys and girls both. I'm interested in when do you start seeing a change or a focus in a kid? You mentioned some kids come in, they already know what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. But some kids really don't have probably any idea for sure what they want to do. They just want to be part of the cool kids playing with the robots. How do you see students making this beginning to get some focus?
I think that, you know, as you do things that work, I think is a good answer to that question. Whenever you're working on things and you are able to see a result, especially in the programming stuff, I think that's really helpful. And also a competition too. Like, the competition's usually not until the spring, but once kids get there and see everything in action, I think that it really helps, show, you know, how things are supposed to be, and they can kind of see their work in action. And absolutely.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point, is bringing up, there's nothing like competition to laser focus your efforts, right?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to understand from both of you what you see in students when they get laser focused, because, oh my gosh, now what we do, we're competing against, you know, any kind of competition is good for that. So I got stories I could tell, but I ain't going to waste our time with it. I'm going to let you guys tell stories about focusing competition and people wanting to win. They want their efforts to produce that kind of fruit. So, okay, we'll talk about that in just a minute. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. We're talking with Sean McMahon. He is a robotics team head coach, and Bill Bennett, first robotics coach, mentor, and judge. We'll explain what first means in a few minutes. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by a whole group of developers and broadcast engineers who, I'll bet you, had their own version of STEM and STEAM programs in school. They're all young people. They're young. It's Broadcast Bionics and Camera One. We'll be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot, and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's Red Lights Fire IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. you can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
You need to check this out. If you're a broadcast engineer or you run a radio station, maybe you're a program director, maybe you're a social media director, any of those things. Camera One from Broadcast Bionics is super cool. Go to bionic.radio. Bionic.radio, or just Google Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. It's really cool. It will help you make much better social media posts for your broadcast facility. All right, here we are talking with Sean McMahon and Bill Bennett about STEM and STEAM programs and how they can relate to us in broadcast engineering. I was just looking here at some information about such programs, pointing out, I guess what should be obvious, you can't build a rocket, a car, a watch, or even a bicycle without an understanding and the application of principles from all these areas, science, technology, engineering, math. They're fundamentally connected to everything in our society, and it's imperative that we help students see these connections. Do you suspect, either one of you, do you suspect that students these days may or may not see these connections, and a program like STEM or STEAM programs really help focus those ideas?
Sean,
that's a tough one. I'm not sure. I think in some cases they do, like especially like software wise, they can see that, you know, when people are writing code and stuff, it's on their iPhones, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they're carrying it around with them all day long, really. The games that they're playing at home and stuff like that, but. Other times I think that there's definitely like a kind of a gap there in being able to see like what the engineering and stuff, like where that can go in the future. So again, it's fun to see when they build the robots that they can put that together and put it on the competition field and see it in action.
You know, I see my own, I have an 11-year-old son and he's expressed numerous times interest in robotics, and this is an area that I got a blind spot. I don't know kind of where to start with. We bought him a few little kits, but they were just dumb little robots. Oh, Bill, talk to us about actual robots in radio. Go ahead, Bill, what you got there?
Well, you know, maybe he can have the best of both worlds, follow his dad in the radio and still make robotics drones that do transmitters and, you know, antenna inspections.
A drone is a robot, isn't it?
Exactly. This is the current issue of Radio World. I haven't even read the article yet, but this... You know, STEM and radio and engineering, it's very connected. Just one example. Everything software, by the way, you know, everything has code in it. That's STEM.
You just made me think of something else, Bill. A few weeks ago when we were talking, Bill, you mentioned motorized faders on a console, on an audio console. That's a robot. And you know what? Because the company, my employer, Telos Alliance, the Axia division, we have motorized faders. We wrote our own software that does two things. It gets rid of the audio zipper effect that sometimes you get from moving a gain block quickly in the digital world. We got a algorithm that there's no zipper effect at all. Gone, totally gone. And the other thing though is, if you're moving a moving fader, think about this: how do you handle slowing it down when it approaches its destination?
Dampening, right?
What's the algorithm you might use? What if you accidentally overshoot? Do you make it sit there and wiggle till it finds it? What do you do? And this is, I don't know that there's open source for this. I want to say, could be wrong, I want to say that my colleagues at Telos Alliance actually figured out a really good algorithm for this and they open sourced it, but they open source something like that. I need to find out about that. Maybe it's the zipper they open source, the anti-zipper software. But, you know, they gave that to the rest of the world. Hey, you want to solve this problem? Here's how we did it. But I got to believe, Sean, thinking about robots here and the software that goes into them, I got to believe that there is, that you can finesse this software to where robots have more realistic movements or movements that just make them work better and more, not necessarily more realistically, but just better because they're better mimicking what they need to do to, you know, to move and so forth. Can you add any insight to that kind of software?
So the stuff that we specifically do is very much like a driving base, you know, to get the robot where it needs to go on the field. And then you'll see arms or grabbers doing things. So we've certainly seen some stuff that's very smooth that programmers have been able to kind of work it out so that it's like everything kind of, like you were saying, like things don't slam to a stop, like they kind of roll to a stop. And we've seen some other teams that have some amazing stuff, like with turrets that are able to track a target while the robot's moving.
Oh, wow.
So there's definitely a lot of opportunities there as your kids become better programmers to do more impressive things like that.
Think about, Bill, this is great. Okay, track a target while the robot is moving.
Yeah, that's a lot of parts.
Well, that's think about a television news helicopter with a microwave dish in the belly shooting back to another microwave dish on the tower, and the two need to, and for maximum gain, the two need to track each other.
Exactly. Right.
They need to point not only the, I mean, you could have a fixed gain four sector antenna on the broadcast tower that the helicopter is shooting back to, and it's just going to hit whichever sector it's closest to. But you could also have two antennas that are tracking each other as the helicopter moves around.
And it reminds me of also geostabilized or like gyroscopes on cameras, right? Which is more robotics. I mean, the beautiful camera shots these days, 4K footage or higher, and it's no shake at all. And that thing is because of robotics.
That's right. That, oh my goodness. And not only gyro-stabilized, you know what I noticed about here? I am not the guy that usually gets the latest and greatest iPhone. Just not that guy. But it just worked out. My old iPhone 8 Plus was getting really long in the tooth and the battery wasn't lasting. And my carrier had a deal on iPhone 13. You know what I've noticed is that, of course, the camera technology has just gotten fantastic. And even their scrolling technology, I just read an article today. They actually gate the number of screen updates per second, depending on not only the content they're trying to show you, but how you're using the phone. So if you're just scrolling a little bit, you're not going to do fast screen updates. But if you're...
That makes sense.
They say, hey, we don't want this to look jerky. We're going to give you 120 frames per second as you go through your Twitter feed.
Yeah. Contextually aware in a way.
Contextually aware. Yeah. So there's got to... That's amazing. Bill, a couple times we've mentioned this acronym FIRST. I said you were the first robotics coach, mentor, and judge. You weren't the first one.
Far from. There is a lot. In fact, I've been a little rusty in the last couple of years, so I'm not first. I'm last first.
if one or both of you could, I've got a website here brought up. It's called FIRST Inspires. Maybe you can talk about what we can gain from this website.
You know, it's funny. And Sean, I know you can talk about this even more, but I'm going to say I found out about FIRST in 2005 on a vacation trip to New Hampshire, and found out about this guy named Dean Kamen, who invented at the time the heart stent, who invented since then the Segway scooter, a bunch of cool stuff. He and a guy named Woody Flowers and some other really talented people and corporations started this thing a long time ago for inspiration. FIRST is an acronym for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology, FIRST. And the other website is firstinspires.org. They are one of many robotics education or experiential education, a framework type organizations in the country or in the world. Perhaps the largest, I'm not sure. Sean mentioned BattleBots. And so when I tell people about FIRST, they say, oh, BattleBots. I'm like, no. It's the opposite. There is this. If you are intending harm to another team's robot, you will be, asked to leave the building. It's about, and Sean also co-optition, right? Cooperative cooperation, but with competition. These teams develop alliances, and you never know who you're going to be paired up with until the time is up. And so it teaches teams to be very aware of other teams' strengths and weaknesses both, because you never know who you're going to be up against. And they have, now that's a competition type of thing there, but age-wise, they've got at least, I think, four different echelons now. FIRC is the flagship and VEX.
FIRST LEGO League. So they they made First LEGO League into three like divisions these days, and then there's First Tech Challenge also, and then First Robotics Competition. Yeah,
right.
So it goes all the way down to what is that, pre-K? I think.
Like, yeah, or, yeah, pre-K through eighth for the First LEGO League.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's grown so much since the early days. But I mean, that's what you're saying, Sean. And I'm stealing your words here, but the kids don't always know what they want to do. And I've seen, and Sean, I know you've seen it every single season, students showing up into the build room. Typically it's in a shop or something like that at the school. Not always. Sometimes they don't have a facility. They have to do it at some other building, you know, maybe in the community somewhere. And these kids show up and they know they want to be there, but they don't know why yet. And they're looking around. And the goal then is to help them kind of dabble into different parts until they find that what gives them traction, and then support them, you know, off to the races, hopefully, because it, like you said, it's experiential. When you learn something by doing, I'm not good at book smarts personally. I'm bad at tests and stuff like that. But a lot of kids are like that. You learn by doing. And that's what FIRST creates that platform for.
Cool. Let's see. Let's get back to us here. So this firstinspires.org is a place where if you don't know of a STEM or STEAM program in your own school, you can go there and see what's in your area. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And also, I suppose, I mean, depending on where you are, FIRST teams are everywhere, from LEGO League all the way up to the FRC flagship high school competitions. But if you don't have one in the area, you know, start with at least maybe the science programs in your local school or something like that, or shop, right? I mean, Sean, I mean, there's, and if you can also start one yourself,
you can,
okay,
which would be an amazing undertaking and so worthwhile.
My son, as I mentioned, he's 11 years old. He's in Cub Scouts, Weeblos this year, and they've been incorporating some, den and pack activities that relate to STEM and STEAM, even if it's not a formal program. I'm glad to see that even Wikipedia recognizes STEAM related fields and jobs that people would go into. And so if you go through a STEM or STEAM program, that'll get you started on your way to becoming an audio developer. It's mentioned right here in Wikipedia, broadcast technician, sports announcer. Okay. Sound engineer, mechanical engineer, medical illustrator, of course, photographer, pilot. Hey, if you're a pilot, you got to, you know, there's a lot of STEM and STEAM concepts you need to be aware of.
And you're a pilot.
I have been, yes.
You can speak to this personally.
Yeah.
Talk about combination of technologies.
Like I keep saying, imagine where I could have gone had I only had STEM and STEAM in school instead of just shop class.
Shop has really evolved. I mean, look at, and I don't mean to interrupt from your reading there, but, shop now, yes, it always was about building and making things, but now electronics have gotten into that picture, and software and optics and, you know, lasers and, you know, AI to a point. And one day there'll be a First Robotics AI robot challenge, I suppose.
When we come back from our next break, I want to chat about specifically some of the things that we learn in STEM and STEAM programs and you know, that some of the technologies, like is there any audio engineering that goes into robotics? I imagine that there could be. If you want the robot to talk, listen, do some, Bill, you're familiar with this concept, turning audio into text and turning that text, parsing that into commands. If you tell your robot, go get me whatever, go get the newspaper this morning, you know,
right.
Wow. I mean, and you're working at ENCO, you guys make something that doesn't go get the newspaper, but it'll let you read the command, right?
Yeah. Encaption is automated speech to text. You bet.
That's the first part of getting a robot to do something, is getting it to understand what the heck you said. So, wow.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Sean, can you, at one point, maybe, and we're things like augmented reality or actually virtual reality or controls and haptics and stuff like that are being used for controlling robots. It's not always just a joystick anymore, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, VR is something that's really kind of new to me. Like I haven't had the opportunity to do it yet, but I mean, there, that thing in your hand's like a motion sensing controller there. So you're not necessarily like pushing buttons, but you're literally looking around the world and moving the controller thing around in real space to move the avatar, you know, in the game. So yeah, I mean, things have gone a little bit beyond the old Atari joystick, right?
You know, that reminds me, it's STEM and STEAM concepts that have gone into some of the new things in an iPhone 13. And I know, yes, okay, Samsung aficionados, I get it. They probably had it first. I've been taking some pictures with this camera, and yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's only because I dropped my 10 too many times, and this is only a couple of days old because I had to get a new phone.
Mine's about a week old.
Okay,
but I've noticed that, well, you know, the 3D, when the camera takes pictures, that it can turn into 3D images. It knows, you know, how far away things are based upon, you know, where the correlations of the two or three cameras meet. But I was taking some pictures at this past weekend at a Boy Scout camp, and the boys were playing kickball. And I tried to snap a picture right when the boy kicked the ball. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the thing focuses. But what I noticed is when I would look at the pictures quickly after taking the picture, I'd immediately go look at it. Was this even in focus? How does this thing work? And what I noticed was it would show me the picture and the camera, the phone would sharpen the picture. Now, it must have been at a pretty, it was a bright sunny day. It might probably a high, you know, shutter speed, if you will. I don't know even how it does that nowadays. My point was, I'm thinking that this iPhone was using AI and perhaps three different images from the cameras to determine the focus.
Interesting. Triangulate with two at least.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what information each of the three cameras was getting, but it didn't, I don't think it works the traditional way we think of as a mechanical, you know, with a magnetic, positioned lens. I don't know that it works that way. Think of it. You can take a picture and throw the background out of focus. You know, there's all kinds of things you can do with today's camera. Oh, and this thing will focus down to 2 centimeters. Wow. So with the iPhone 8, I was trying to take a picture of, for example, a spider on a spider web, and it kept focusing on the bushes in the background. I need to go try this. My point there is there's technology going on that we don't even know. There's improvements in our daily lives that we don't even hardly know about. We just know the stuff is beginning, not beginning, stuff is working that didn't used to work as well.
That's robotics and software. And I read a story last night of an eye doctor that's using the new iPhone macro for looking in a patient's eye because the incredible detail of that macro. We, long time ago, me and Sean and another gentleman, Ryan, got together and created a robotics alliance. And Ryan, after he graduated from Carnegie Mellon University, had went off to Google in California. So, and he was very big into FIRST Robotics and started mentoring and coaching teams himself, even during college. So, I mean, there's another great example, software. Google's all about software. So that's kind of where the trajectory is. And FIRST still has, and again, I haven't checked the last couple of seasons, Sean, but autonomous mode at the beginning, find a target.
Yeah, that's something we were actually programming that this week for those off season tournaments I mentioned earlier.
I bet Kirk would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, 15 seconds, and it drives itself.
I got to hear more about tournaments. We got to take a quick break right now. This week in Radio Tech with Sean McMahon and Bill Bennett, our guests, we're talking about STEM and STEAM and what students can learn that will get them interested in some career path. Hopefully, maybe for those of us in broadcasting who need them, maybe a career in broadcast engineering. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my good friend Hank Landsberg at Henry Engineering. You talk about a one-man STEM and STEAM show right there. Hank Landsberg has designed all kinds of things that you and I need to build broadcast facilities. Yes, I know we could come up with these circuits ourselves. And you know, most of these things are too, on the one hand, too simple to design a whole, you know, computerized or PLC around. On the other hand, they're too complicated or just such a pain to build ourselves. So Hank Landsberg does the building for you. This is the Henry Superlight. What is it? I can build a relay to light a light. Yes, you can. But you know what? Hank Landsberg has done it for you and given you the right connections, inputs, and outputs to make it easy. This Henry Superlight is not for lighting up big 110-volt lights in your on-air lights. No, it's for the new LED-based on-air lights and mic lights and other lights that light up when you turn the mic on. And that's what it's meant for. It does give you some Form C relay contacts if you need to go run something else. Maybe you need to mute a ringer or mute some speakers. You can use this to mute the speakers on, let's say, a non-broadcast style audio console, maybe a little Mackie or Behringer console, something like that. You can also besides wiring it up with these EuroBlock connectors, and they're convenient. They pop right off. You can do your wiring to them, and then you pop them right back on. They're keyed. You can't put them on upside down. But they also have these RJ45 connectors, and so you can easily wire these to, let's say, an Axia X node to its GPIO, so that you can actually set an address. And so I took the top off. Yeah, sorry about that. I took the top off to let you see the inside. Yes, it's simple, but it's exactly what you need. It's got some timer circuits in there to run the flasher. It's got this little relay here, the Form C relay contact. It's got a bigger transistor here that runs the heavier duty current to run your LED on-air lights. And it's got these little header jumpers in here so that you can set an address for this box. You can have several of these boxes daisy chained along with Cat5 cable and RJ45 connectors and give them each an address. Let's say you've got four or five different studios that you need to do. You can just jumper these, set the address, and voila, you've got your studio addresses if you have these all in a common wiring area to go run your on-air lights. Lots of possibilities. And Hank Landsberg has thought about all these things to just make your life easier. You should check out the other things that Hank Landsberg has available. In fact, let me see if I can get you a couple other things here. Let's try this, and I'm going to get my guests in here. They're going to get to see what we're looking at. This is the Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller, and there's all the specs on it. Hank even includes easy schematics. You can go get the schematic really easily from this. It's so flexible. It runs off of different voltages, and it can control different voltages. Really super easy. But you need to go to the website, henryeng.com. henryeng.com is the website. So check it out. Henry Super Relay. Now, when you check it out and you want to buy one or buy anything from Henry Engineering, here's what you do. You need to go to Broadcaster's General Store. Broadcaster's General Store. Let me click this back in. And I'll show you here. Here's the website you go to, bgs.cc, bgs.cc for Broadcasters General Store. There you go. You can go to the website or you can call them. They've set up their whole business to be friendly on the phone. So you can call Broadcasters General Store at 352-622-7700. Use their website, find the equipment that you're interested, pro video, pro audio, studio gear, even RF equipment. You want to buy all kinds of things in the whole RF world, including, hey, you need copper, you need coax, you need dehydrators, tower lighting. They've got that too. Lots and lots of things at Broadcaster General Store. Really almost anything you need. Oh, look at that. There's a banner ad for Telos Infinity IP audio. Wow. So much stuff. Oh, look at that. There's the customizable, smart, and accurate stuff from VClock. Wow. Oh, man, I could spend hours on their website. Thank goodness. 352-622-7700 is their phone number. All right. We're back.
Gizmos.
Gizmos. Yeah.
You know, I thought for a moment I was looking at a robotics controller. I mean, uh-huh. Really? Right, Sean? Little black boxes, a lot of connectors.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe, Sean, you might want to speak to, because we've been engaged in the past when FIRST Robotics will like adopt a new controller and then we do training of the teams and stuff. And I'm sure it's been evolving, you know, but these are what real world controllers that these students will one day actually encounter in industry, right? It's not just a hobby. It's not like a, you know, one-off. It's a real production thing.
Yeah, I believe that was certainly the case with the National Instruments Compaq Rio. Like that was something that I believe they were using in industry. The last couple of controllers have been the National Instruments RoboRio number. The V2 is about to come out this year, coming up, I believe. That thing, I think, is more customized specifically for FRC teams. But the things that it does and the way that it's programmed, I think, are totally like applicable to, you know, the real world.
That's cool. And I guess that is an interesting point when it comes to the robotics competitions. They are unique these teams all have to have systems that communicate. There's a lot of safety involved, security, you know, it's all wireless stuff that the industry products may not quite relate to as well as like a custom.
Well, so help me understand a few of these concepts. If you're doing robotics, it seems like you could involve a lot of technologies that you'll end up using in audio, in video, in RF transmission, RF reception. Talk to me a little bit more about these controllers. What's a robotic controller? What am I going to find in there? What kind of CPU or software am I going to be experiencing there?
Well, that's a little tough for me to answer, as I kind of stayed away from the software stuff the last few years. But like I said, it is a custom controller that we have made by National Instruments.
Okay.
It's got USB ports and Ethernet and some PWM stuff and some relay controls. And then there's USB where you can plug in cameras, like so the robot can see.
So the controller is typically, it's an off-the-shelf controller, and I guess there's probably some standardized software that goes in there, but I guess you're probably able to modify it yourself if you know what you're doing?
Yeah, teams have a couple different options to write software for the robots. We write ours in C++. Other options include Java, and I know they were talking about Python. I'm not sure if they ever got there. And then LabVIEW, which is also made by National Instruments.
Okay. What about RF transmission? What's typically, how are robots typically communicating RF-wise with the whoever's controlling them or with other things around them? Maybe they're just getting standard Wi-Fi signals. What's going on RF-wise?
Yeah, it is Wi-Fi. On the field at each driver's station, you'll take your team's laptop down there, mm-hmm. and you'll plug into Ethernet, and then those all run back to a switch, which runs out to a giant access point that then goes back and talks to all the robots, which each have a wireless radio on them. So they're all talking back to the field wireless access point.
And one cool thing there is because these are fairly heavy robots and they have arms and armatures and it's in within kind of a field, right? A field of play that has barriers around it, you know, a foot and a half high, but still, you know, something could break or fly loose or, and so you got to be able to turn them all off real quick. So that's also why they're all linked like that, just to keep things safe, just in case a robot does get a mind of its own.
What about some of the higher powered circuits that would run servos or motors to move arms, move legs, lift something kind of heavy? What kind of size or capability or currents or voltages are we talking about in a robot that students would deal with?
So these robots all run on 12-volt batteries. They're most similar to like a motorcycle or like a marine, like a boat battery. Mm-hmm. You don't see a whole lot of big motors. They're about the biggest ones I've seen are about the size of a soda can. And then you'll see standard hobby servos like doing different jobs on the robot. And then a lot of teams also run compressed air systems.
Yeah, pneumatics are really cool to watch.
Really?
Like articulated arms that, you know, move an armature or an object.
Yeah. Ah, so hence the psh, 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 noises. Yeah, okay.
So of course, that means you have to be, there's your airflow. You have to build have a compressor and an air distribution system. You know, they could consult with you, perhaps.
just like my 1987 Mercedes.
There you go.
Wow. So is the air compressor on board or is it a stored tank of air?
I think nowadays it has to be on board. They're small. They're like yo big these days. But we've seen teams run multiple air tanks in order to have enough air in their system to do the tasks that they want to do. I know Bill's old friends over at McKeesport have a t-shirt launching cannon, and it has a tank on it the size of like a scuba tank. Like this thing's gigantic.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That, you know, but you raise an interesting point. The mass of that, the rule book is ginormous, Kirk. You if you want a scuba tank, you're going to have to cut off a whole lot of other weight. Mm-hmm. Weights, size, dimension. There's rules. I was once a safety inspector. It's more like safety, but the robots are all inspected in many different ways to make sure they're all fairly.
So you know, my brain is turning, trying to figure out how to apply these concepts and ideas and technologies and parts into things for the broadcast industry. So here, when we get past COVID, we get back to having concerts again, and t-shirts are a thing. You know, you want to shoot t-shirts out to the audience. You have a robot that goes along the stage where the performers are, where the radio station thing is going on, and that robot is going to be shooting t-shirts, and it needs to shoot a bunch of them. So it's got this Gatling gun sort of, you know, rotating barrels on there, and they recharge, you know, when they're, and then they, well, that'd be a heck of a project. I'd like to see that. No, but seriously, if you watch some college or professional football and you see these cable cams running around the field, right? What robotics do we have there?
Big time.
Yeah.
Yep. And again, limited resources. You can't have it too power hungry or too heavy, right? Wireless communications, of course, smooth dampening of the motors. Yeah.
I haven't watched them enough to know for sure, but I got to believe that, you know, those cable cams might be down near the field when they're breaking their huddle, but that cable cam needs to be up out of the way for the play. Right. And so I imagine there's, aren't there winches that pull that cable?
Typically four motors. Yep. And they're all talking to each other. One gives where the other takes type of thing.
Sure. But, sure.
All software.
Right. Right. But not only getting the shot, but also getting out of there. So you don't affect the gameplay.
Right.
Any more than you have to. Oh, wow. Yeah. Then we have the whole design that as applies to broadcast. And we've had them for some years, but they keep getting better and better and better, where they can put things on the field that aren't really there. They can show the line of scrimmage electronically, right? Mm-hmm. They can, during Formula One racing, they can put advertising banners all over the place that aren't really there in the real world, but they're there on TV, right?
Exactly.
And they stick in place, they move around. They look like they're on the road or on the fence. And this is another form of robotics.
Yeah, yeah. And especially a lot of software there and positioning sensors. These cameras that, like the first and 10 kind of line, there are sensors on the camera originally, especially knowing where the camera was, where it was panned at, basically, right. And where it was zoomed in and out. And so much of that can even be done with software now and just visual recognition by software. But yeah, and sometimes you watch a camera and you can slightly see that line move because maybe it's in a not so stable seating position.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's amazingly transparent now, smooth.
When are we going to have robots that watch the action of a sporting event, turn that into speech or turn it into text that gets spoken? I mean, something to I don't want to eliminate the play-by-play announcer, but it seems like that could happen at some point.
There are AI systems now that autonomously tell you what kind of contextual information or visual information is on screen at any given moment. Sports broadcasters have historically been using humans to literally note and annotate video frame by frame, or at least, you know, second by second, what players were on that, you know, along those clips. And now there are AI systems that can do that. I don't know if they're as perfect or not, really, as far as humans, but humans make mistakes too, of course. You have to pay for that, of course, but then you have to hire a human to do it as well. So, but yeah, that's getting interesting.
Wow, wow, wow. Guys, we're going to take one more break. But when we come back after this break, that's our last break, we're going to leave our audience with a tip of the week. And oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you, Sean and Bill, we need something. You know, if people are interested, we've looked at the firstinspires.org website. Maybe there's other websites. Maybe there's a map or events or a calendar that people should be aware of. I think broadcast engineers will serve themselves well. If you want to volunteer, if you want to do something, if you want to get involved, could be a good thing. But we'll let you guys come up with some of those ideas. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Angry Audio. And I just so happen to have with me, in fact, I want to maybe put you guys back on the screen here. Bill, you're a broadcast engineer. You've built stuff.
Yeah.
And I know I make a joke about it almost every week. This is a headphone amp, right? And this one it's got four screw holes here, and you put this up under your table, right? Your audio console table. And so it lays under your table. It's got little rubber feet right here that keep it vibration free. It doesn't sit there and vibrate. It's well designed, really nicely designed.
Smooth edges too.
It's what?
Smooth edges.
Well, that's it. Bill,
bump your knee on that thing.
You not only you won't bump your knee, but you won't snag your pantyhose on this, you know. And that hadn't helped me that much, but you know, I can see where you won't snag your pants on it either. So
that's cool.
This is a heck of a good headphone amp. You can run it with 16 volts AC right here, but also if you put power into this one, Bill, it injects power into this studio hub cable. So you can run up to three of these. Daisy chain them together. They each get the same audio, but each person has their own volume control. It's got both kinds of headphone jacks, as I say, country and western, the 3.5 millimeter and the quarter inch headphone jack. So you got that. It's a great headphone amp. If, however, you're into the studio hub design, it comes in a Decora compatible package right there.
So really?
You can use the decor a faceplate.
Yeah, the Leviton. Plastic. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the often sold by Leviton. These you can daisy chain four of them together. This is a little bit less powerful, but you can daisy chain four of these together using the Studio Hub standard. And there's one more cool thing to show you. This was a great invention. So how often have you dealt with a radio talent who is wearing headphones, and maybe they forget they're wearing headphones, and they get up from the console and they try to walk away, and they get, you know, not only do they tear the headphone off their head, they may very well damage the headphone jack, right? Or they may damage the headphone plug on the end of the headphones. Well, look at this. This is a headphone disconnector from Angry Audio. So you just pop, the guy walks away and it just comes apart. And oh, look, it's like the Apple MagSafe.
It is.
Yeah. And it'll look, it goes right back together. And when it and because it's a magnet, it won't go together the wrong way. It won't do that. It only goes together the right way.
Oh,
is that cool? Off.
I can use that for this headset right here.
I talked to Jim Addy. He was my guest last week, and he said this has already saved his bacon from having to repair some headphone jacks. It happened to be a radio station where they have a lot of brokered time, and so people come in who may not be full-time broadcasters. They may not be used to the idea of, or they may put their headphone around their neck, forget about it, and get up.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Comes in both sizes. That was the quarter inch size, but also the 3.5 millimeter size. And they work together. So if you have 3.5 millimeter and quarter inch, you can mix and match those two together. Boop, there you go. And there they are.
That's clever.
Clever from Angry Audio. You go to the website at angryaudio.com to check that out. And I think it's just a brilliant, brilliant idea. Hey, our show's also brought to you by my friends over at Max Connect Wireless. Here's my SBE board of directors buddy, Gary Morrill, to tell you about.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
I've got one of these as well. This is the PepWave 4G LTE modem, but it doesn't matter if you have the cable, the cradle point or the PepWave. What matters is the SIM card that goes inside. You get the SIM card from Max Connect Wireless. It's spelled funny, MaxxKonnect. You can do maxconnect.com or maxconnectwireless.com, get you to the same place, and check it out. A lot of broadcasters are using these now because they work. It's prioritized data. You can have 60,000 fans in the stands, and your data still gets through, even if there's a lot of people using the tower. Really good stuff from Max Connect Wireless. All right, let's bring everybody back. Excuse me. It is time for our tip of the week. Sean and Bill, put you on the spot. Maybe you got a tip for us for people who want to get involved with STEM and STEAM.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like watching kids and being out there and in the community and meeting people that have never seen this stuff before, we get a lot of folks, especially you know, high school kids, who are always saying like, "Oh, I'm not smart enough for this." Just try it. That's the tip of the week. Just go to the meetings, go check it out. There's really no prereqs to do stuff like this. You just got to show up and be willing to work hard, and you have no idea what kind of doors are going to open if you come and just come try it.
Well, it sure seems like this website, firstinspire.org, is this a good place to get started?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? Okay. Yep. So this can connect absolutely. You with local groups or help you start your own if you need to.
These videos, it changed my life because this sounds a little weird. I wasn't living in Pittsburgh when I first judged an event here, and I started discovering the city and making friends before I even moved here. You make friends for life. And of course that sounds very selfish. It's about helping these kids understand what potential is out there for them, but it's both, you know, what good is doing something that you don't also enjoy, right? It helps to do both. And when you go to an event and you coach or mentor or judge, it will change your life because you help these kids see more potential in themselves and in the world ahead of them than they might have otherwise seen. And that's fantastic.
I like that it's such a contemporary topic and kids can get interested. And lo and behold, without even knowing, hey, they might end up liking the technologies that they didn't think they'd like.
You know, in radio, we haven't talked about this much, but radio is so different than the gadgets, the gizmos that you need them all, right? You need that headphone amp under your table. But you also now are involved, if you're in engineering at all, a very IT-centric environment. And of course, these robots that Sean's team and other robotics teams are building have a significant IT component, not necessarily, I mean, obviously software too, but IT. I mean, literally, you know, Wi-Fi networking, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And computers. So.
And audio over IP. I mean, TV, radio, any content creators now. I was in Brooklyn, New York at a major podcast creation company that had many studios, all audio over IP. Yeah.
I think I know who you mean, actually. And it's it makes it so much easier to move audio around, to distribute it, to back it up, to transmit it. It's just elegant. Just got to get used to how.
All right. Well, and hey, for years, the National Weather Service has had Perfect Paul, right? To
AI.
AI. Sometimes we have to correct his pronunciation, but that's okay. We can do that.
You being a weather person, you have the tuned in ears for that.
You tell Perfect Paul, no, it's not Mobile, Alabama. It's Mobile, Alabama. No, it's not Mobile Home. It's Mobile Home. So.
Oh, we have some names like that here in Pittsburgh, right, Sean?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Hey, I've enjoyed talking with you guys for the last hour. Sean McMahon, robotics team head coach. Thank you so much for lending your expertise to our conversation tonight.
You're welcome. It's been fun. Thank you for having us tonight.
Good to meet you. And Bill, thank you so much for coming up with this idea to talk about STEM and STEAM. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks for making it real, you guys. It's been fun.
All right. You've enjoyed This Week in Radio Tech. Be sure you go see our sponsors, Bionic.radio, Broadcast Bionics. Also, our friends at Broadcasters General Store, BGS.cc. Please pay them some attention. Max Connect Wireless and Angry Audio at angryaudio.com. Thanks a lot to our producer, Suncast, who produces this show. And thanks a lot to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find some other fine podcasts as well. We're going to see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.